instance where therapies have a significant impact on colon cancer is when the disease is spread to the liver or to the lungs. How has the approach to liver or lung metastases changed in the past few years? Dr. Saltz?
Well, I think it's important to differentiate the patient that has widespread multifocal disease in liver and lung from the patient that has disease confined to one organ. Patients that have a tumor in which the biology is such that the tumor has chosen to metastasize to only the liver or only the lung have potentially a different disease. And we're learning that some of those people are still curable.
There's this newer concept of what we call conversion chemotherapy, where there may be an individual who's borderline in terms of resectability, but perhaps since these new combination agents have a significant improvement in response rate, more of those individuals can go on to surgery. This is another area where we're looking very carefully at clinical trial results to get a better handle as to what percentage of our population of patients should receive this approach.
Well, we know that seeing real cases helps doctors to learn about new approaches to therapy. And we were fortunate to be able to talk to Tom, one of Dr. Engstrom's patients in Springfield, Pennsylvania. He had metastatic colon cancer at the time of his diagnosis.
That was one Friday afternoon. I came home from work, and I had a pain in my upper abdomen. And I just said to my wife, I said, well, let me just go to the ER, the local hospital, and get a check down. They were doing all types of testing on me. The doctor comes in to my room and says, Tom, you have four massive tumors on your liver. Usually when you get cancer in the liver, it's coming from another site. I had a golf ball sized tumor in my colon, which was probably 3/4 of blockage of the colon. The doctors said to me, you have colon cancer stage 4. It's a very serious cancer. There's not much you can do. I decided I wanted to get a second opinion. The doctors there were very, very positive and very upbeat that I could go through this and have a chance of beating it. The first chemo regimen I went through, I would usually be sick maybe 1, 2, or 3 days after chemo, and after that, I would feel fine.
We had him see one of our surgeons, and he felt that he could resect not only the primary tumor, but part of the liver.
I had one tumor on my left lobe of the liver, which they cut out, and they also resected my colon where the tumor in the colon was.
Go ahead.
See? It's been tough. My younger boy doesn't understand, but he wouldn't come near me for a couple months, and because he's seen Daddy all cut up and with staples in my stomach. My oldest son has taken it good. The second round started. They found out that the chemo was not working anymore. My oncologist and my surgeon got together and said, we have a window of opportunity here. Let's take it now before, you know, this active tumor gets, you know, to be a problem. The second surgery was liver resection. Everything went perfect. I felt like the luckiest man in the world that I get a second chance.
And they didn't want to
what I'm doing now is a maintenance chemo, which I started 2 weeks ago. You're trying to kill off any existing cells that are in your body. This one has a lot more side effects. A lot of nausea, some vomiting, diarrhea, shakes, chills, fevers. It comes and goes. You feel good one day, the next day, you know, there's an issue. I will be doing it every other week for 6 months. As long as nothing occurs, as long as there's no cancer popping up anywhere else, I will be done.
Potentially, he has a chance for a cure in a situation which, when we first saw him, everybody had said there was no chance.
I'm here to help you. I want you to push out, and as you push out, breathe out. Go.
I'm looking forward for the second chance, and I want to get back to the normal life. I haven't had any physical activity for 18 months. I'm looking forward to getting into an exercise program and getting back into shape.
There you go. That's chest press.
I would just tell people out there, when you're diagnosed with cancer, no matter how bad it seems, never give up hope.
Well, Tom points out the importance of, first of all, individualizing therapy, but secondly, having a multidisciplinary evaluation done on the first visit. He met with a surgeon who specializes in the resection of metastatic colon cancer, and we discussed what the aims of the therapy would be for him. And, of course, he's a very cooperative patient, one that wanted everything done. He was in good physical health in spite of the fact of having metastatic disease. So when we initially talked to him, we offered him the FOLFOX regimen with the oxaliplatin. In addition, he received bevacizumab. So we gave him maximum therapy with the goal of reducing the tumors. Notice that his primary cancer was not resected when we first saw him. We thought it was much more important to manage the total disease and then stage the resections when he could also benefit from resection of the liver metastasis.
I think he brings up a lot of important points. Point number one, look carefully for every opportunity to cure a patient. Before we decide that a patient is incurable, let's make sure we're absolutely sure. Point number two, the surgical evaluation needs to be by a sub specialist, needs to be by someone who's done liver operations twice before breakfast and is going to do another one this afternoon, not someone who did one a month ago and is looking forward to another opportunity. That's just not the level of expertise that's needed for this kind of operation. And this is one of the few situations where I believe a PET scan is actually both helpful and necessary in colorectal cancer. When we're considering a patient for potential resection of metastatic disease, we should get a PET scan prior to the initiation of therapy to see if there's evidence of disease outside of the liver. Because if there is, it's going to change our whole strategy. If we wait until we've done the chemotherapy and then we get a PET scan and we don't see disease outside the liver, we don't know if there is, in fact, disease. We just can't see it. But if we get it up front, it tells us we're at least in the game for a curable approach. We start with a chemotherapy and then evaluate whether we've got the result that will take us on to surgery.
Another point that this case illustrates is the need for upfront planning, not only from a surgical perspective, but from a chemotherapy perspective. What we've learned is although these agents can give very impressive response rates, generally the maximum response is within 2 to 3 months. These agents can also harm the liver, making the surgeon's job a little bit more complicated. So in part of the planning and evaluation, we want to give enough therapy so we can get to a surgical endpoint, but not so much that we enhance the toxicity, particularly liver damage.
That's a critical point because it's not just that it can make the surgeon's job more complicated, it can make the surgeon's job impossible.
Right.
A patient can have a surgically resectable tumor but be medically unresectable on the basis of periportal fibrosis and portal hypertension.
Tom's situation was even more complex because the tumors to be resected from the liver were in both lobes of the liver, that is the left and right lobe. And therefore, he had two liver operations. The first operation followed the 4 months of the oxaliplatin bevacizumab therapy with the removal of the primary tumor in the colon and the dominant lesion in the left lobe of the liver. He then received more chemotherapy while we were preparing him for surgery on the right lobe of the liver. In order to accomplish that surgery, we needed to embolize some of the small vessels feeding the right lobe of the liver so that the left lobe would hypertrophy and take over the function of the liver. So he had more involvement with surgery and more involvement than chemotherapy than most patients.
But while his situation is an extreme case of really utilizing all technology for a potential at cure, what I would emphasize is in cancer surgery, you don't get credit for 99%. You only operate on the people where going in, you think there's a realistic opportunity to render the person free of all known cancer. There will be patients, even if the disease is confined to the liver, where, in fact, the spread may be too diffuse and an operation to get everything out is just not going to be technically possible.
And that emphasizes, with upfront planning, you need to define goals, not only with your medical team, but also with the individual. So it's very clear what the thinking is. And with the understanding that we may have a strategy with the hope it will work, but it doesn't always work. And this requires careful interactions with the individual on a continuum to even redefine goals at times when things may not have happened the way we would like to see it.
Well, Dr. Engstrom, how do you select the initial treatment for a patient like Tom?
Well, and if surgery is an option, and in this case resection of the liver is an option, I would pick chemotherapy regimens that are, first of all, well-tolerated, but secondly, will give maximum effect on the tumor. We want to see tumor shrinkage, not so much that it's going to change the operation for the patient and the surgeon, but so that we know we have a patient whose tumor is responsive to chemotherapy, because then I have some degree of assurance that treating him following the surgery will further enhance the effect and result in a long-term disease-free interval.
But this is a situation where we do have choices, and he had one of several good options that could have been used here. When we talk about selection of upfront chemotherapy, whether it's in a pre-surgical or just an initiation of metastatic disease treatment, the two regimens that Paul referred to at the top of the program, FOLFOX and FOLFIRI, are options that sort of come to mind. They've been compared head-to-head in a number of studies, and excuse me, and from an efficacy point of view, they're really quite equivalent. So we can individualize care by looking at the different side effect profiles and seeing which will be more or less acceptable to a patient. The FOLFOX regimen with oxaliplatin will have neurotoxicity as one of its major issues. That's going to matter to some people. It's going to matter to the concert violinist and the surgeon, of course, but also to a person who works outside in the cold. Imagine a construction worker in the Northeast working with cold sensitivity from neurotoxicity on a jackhammer outside. It's not going to happen. So by moving that person towards a treatment that won't have neurotoxicity, we may be able to help some individuals continue with their lifestyles and what they want to do.
We talked about patients who convert, but what about patients who do not convert to resectable status? How does the treatment proceed for them, Dr. Saltz?
Well, I think an important point about the type of therapy that was selected in the case of the patient that we just saw is it was a completely appropriate first-line therapy for a person in whom surgery wouldn't be part of the plan. And the discussion that I suspect I might have had with a patient like this is an appropriate therapy to start now. If we get a really good response, we can move to the surgical option. If we don't, well, that won't be our best outcome, but we're still on the right course and we'll still continue with this therapy. So here again, at the time that therapy was started, nobody was going to be in a position to promise him he was going to go to surgery.
Well, let's take a moment to talk about chemotherapy after metastatic tumors have been removed. Tom, the patient we met earlier, is continuing with his treatment.
What I'm doing now is a maintenance chemo, which I started 2 weeks ago. And it's only one drug that I'm taking. And It's called maintenance chemo because you're trying to kill off any existing cells that are in your body that could be lingering around and setting up shop somewhere else. So you want to make sure you can kill all the cancer cells.
Well, Tom has a good understanding of why we are continuing to treat him. He called it maintenance therapy. I might call it adjuvant therapy. And some people might call it continuation of the spectrum of treatments that he has been receiving. The purpose, of course, is to further treat any microscopic disease that he might have in the liver or any place else in his body. We're trying to maximize the opportunity for a long-term control and potential cure of his disease.